past the hour, and we begin a new week of broadcasting that should be a typical broadcast schedule for the coming week. I don't have to go anywhere. Let me start off by thanking our genial hosts for the road trip I was on this past week, thanking Families USA for inviting the Horn, Rick Smith, Guy James, and me to Health Action 12 there in Washington, D.C. Met a lot of good people, had a lot of good conversations, and it was just magnificent to get to hang out with Rick and Guy for a couple of days. Top notch, top shelf, as professional as they come. And I apologize for my own part in some of the technical glitches that we had. It's what you get when you broadcast on the cutting edge. Like I told John Fox in an email when I got back, you learn something with every one of these. This time through, the lesson for Grasshopper was bring gaffer's tape. I was about halfway through. Well, I'd gotten through with my first conversation on Friday when a guest's shoe got hung up in some cords and unplugged everything under the sun. It was kind of a booger. But we got most of the stuff back to normal. And it proved to be a very, very interesting couple of days. And many thanks to John Fox for staying up into the wee hours and putting in some seriously long hours to make things work the way that they did. The screw-ups were none of his doing. But thanks to Families USA. I hope we get to go back there next year. Now, to begin, this is, of course, Monday. And that means that it is... wait, what? Yeah, that. That's right, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell your Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Step right up for one thin dime, less than one thin dime, less than one thin dime per hour of programming here on the Horn. You can step behind this cybernetic veil and see Morans, right-wing Morans, pig-licking Morans, GOP Morans, teabagging Morans, media Morans, hateful Morans, murderous Morans, in all their effusive, disgusting glory. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Women with small children, pregnant women, are not advised to enter the Moran Monday tent. Keep your hands on your wallets, gents, and your purses under your arm, ladies. The Morans have been known to be a little grabby at times. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Now, it's a little bit unfair of me, I must admit, because the first couple of nominations that I have for Moran Monday stem from my own personal experience over the past few days. So it's not something that would be out there for you to necessarily make a nomination on, but I hope you'll forgive me that and put up with, indulge me. As I said, the Health Action 12 event was a wonderful event. And on Friday night, the big to-do, was it Friday night? No, it was Thursday night. On Thursday night, the big to-do was a performance by the Capitol Steps. You can find them on Twitter at Cap Steps. At Cap Steps. And they are an institution in Washington, D.C., creators of political satire, that sort of thing, catchy and witty and generally fun to behold. But I am sad to say I walked out on this Capitol Steps performance. Why? Well, the reason went like this. They had just finished one skit and they were transitioning to another, so of course they've got a guy who comes out and does a bit of comic vamping for a few minutes while they do costume changes and that kind of thing. That's just how, it's kind of very vaudeville-esque. And so this guy enters stage left, enters from stage left, and he's got the rumpled trench coat on and the fedora pulled down under over his eye. And he's doing that typical hard-boiled Mickey Spillane kind of narrative. It was another night in the Merciless City. I'd been a long time without work. Hadn't been paid. Why, I'd probably been without work longer than the Tooth Fairy in West Virginia. Now, I didn't throw anything. I didn't boo or hiss or catcall. I just got up and walked out because, frankly, I don't need that. There are dentition problems in this state. There are dentition problems all over Appalachia. They are especially prevalent in the areas where mountaintop removal takes place, where literally children who have been told and taught by their parents to brush after every meal and floss still have their teeth dissolve in their heads because of the coal-borne poisons that are in the water that they drink from their wells. So I wasn't inclined to sit around and listen and give any more of my finite time upon this planet to this group that thinks hillbilly jokes are still in. Maybe I should have stuck around. Maybe they had a couple of good Jew knee slappers. Or maybe they had a really, really, I don't care who you are, that's funny, Polish jokes. Or maybe when the guy continued his monologue, he said, "Yeah, I've been out of work. I'd worked less than a black person." Because they're all comedy born of the same sort of derision. So that's my first nominee, the Capital Steps. I tweeted at them last night. Maybe you could join me. Maybe we can get that one little bit out of their act. "I'd had less work than the Tooth Fairy in West Virginia. Ha, 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 ha! Ain't that a funny one? That's a real knee slapper. I just thought of that one the other day, and I told the crew, and they said, 'Oh, you'll get a big laugh out of that.' And you know what? They did. Oh, the audience just roared with mirth, because, toothless hillbilly jokes, what a hoot! Unless you know the reality. Unless you know about the volume and the breadth and the scope of the poisons that go into human bodies in Appalachia because people like Don Blankenship and Kevin Crutchfield and the folks at Peabody Energy and Arch Coal and Patriot haven't yet figured out that they don't hitch U-Hauls to hearses, and consequently they must have more profit, more, 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 more! And they do it as teeth dissolve in children's heads. So I'm not gonna lay off of this. And I hope maybe that you will help out along the way. They are at CapSteps on Twitter. Just, hey, at CapSteps, knock off the hillbilly jokes. People are being poisoned and dying in Appalachia for your electricity. Just saying. Now the other observation, the other nomination for Moran Monday, based upon my own observations, comes from something that happened on Friday. On Friday, tour buses started pulling up to the hotel where we were. And they started disgorging hordes. I mean, hordes of white people, all wearing matching knitted scarves. I mentioned this toward the end of Guy James's program on Friday. They were orange and blue. Being D.C., I thought, well, is Syracuse playing Georgetown, perhaps, in basketball? No, it wasn't the University of Illinois. Naturally, Guy James went Big Ten, where I went SEC, and went, no, it's not Florida either. No, they weren't sports people at all. They were there to march for life. And this particular group came from the, I don't know, Father Whackbottom's March for Life from somewhere in Missouri. Nope, not the Broncos either, Marty. See, we're also shallowly attuned to sports. Friends of Tebow. God, I thought I was past mentioning him. But that was part of another delightful conversation. I was talking to the fella outside the hotel, and he brought it up. I didn't. He was, as is kind of ought to be normal, the guy was gay and said so, and he said, you know, I caught Tim Tebow one day giving an interview, and I just had the sound down, and I called my husband and said, look at him. So all that business I've told, all those mentions I've made about him setting off the gaydar, we have an authentic sighting. But no, this is not about Tim Tebow or the Broncos. No, they were there to march for life. In other words, they were there to march against your privacy. And that includes men as well as women. They were there to march against your ability to make decisions about your body based on nothing more than your conscience, your needs, and your physician's advice, and if you happen to believe in them, the counsel of your deity of choice. There's that choice word. Such problems. And beyond the Missourians with their matching scarves, there was another group of privileged white people who were from Father Knuckle Walks, March for Life, and instead of scarves, they all had little matching backpacks with Father Knuckle Walks, March for Life, imprinted on them. And they had them some monks running around in dresses with big heavy crosses hanging on their necks. Now, if you want a picture of irony, it's a guy in 8th century garb standing in a luxury hotel lobby with a cell phone against his ear, who happens to be sworn to the poverty of Jebus. And here's the other thing I observed with these morons. Without a doubt, the vast majority of those in attendance were under 20 and female. They're getting them young. And I couldn't help but look at all those young women thinking, you know, somewhere along the way, I'd say that one in five of these, if not more, will need the input and advice and service of a qualified women's reproductive health care professional. And their parents have dragged them to Washington, D.C. to save the fetuses and to make sure that they understand from an early age that they are dirty, 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 sin-filled women, daughters of Eve who brought about the fall from grace. And they were going to march to save the fetuses. And they were, of course, from various and sundry churches. Most of them did, in fact, appear to be Roman Catholic. And so, yes, the Hyatt Regency does still have a Gideon's Bible in it. When I got back up to the room, I did a quick read-through of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, looking for that passage where it says, "And Mary Magdalene looked unto him and said, Yea, verily, Lord, I am with child and want to do away with it. What sayest thou, Master? And Jesus did say unto her, Verily, very, verily, verily, Mary Magdalene, it is murder, and thou shalt not abort thy baby." Wasn't in there. Wasn't a blessed word about it in an era where everybody knew about exposing infants after they had been born. Everybody knew about aborting infants before they were born, and still Jesus said nothing about it, just like he says nothing about being gay. But in the course of perusing those Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, I don't carry any brief for John. I did see a whole lot about how you treat the poor, and about how you treat those who are living, and the debts we owe to one another to treat each other with a modicum of decency. I saw these things. And in seeing these things, I couldn't help reflecting on how much good could be done in the name of their supposed Savior if only all the resources and all the time and all the money that they were pouring into their religion-driven efforts to make sure that the rest of us do not have a right to privacy, do not have the right to control of our own bodies. How much good could be done if all those resources were not poured into that and were instead poured into feeding the poor, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless, giving aid and comfort to the sick and dying, and hope to the imprisoned. Because, you know, that's Jesus' little laundry list of what you gotta do if you want to be like Him. But no. They were going to save the fetuses. And so there we were on Friday night. Ma in her kerchief and I in my cap, or whatever. No, Agnes wasn't with me. And the fire alarm went off. And it sounds like general quarters on a World War II aircraft carrier, believe me when I say this. Warning! A fire event emergency has been located in this hotel. Evacuate all rooms immediately. Do not use the elevators. Take the stairs. So I was getting ready to go to bed, and I got dressed and put my coat on and started down the stairs, and got about two-thirds of the way down thinking, all right, which one of these dumbass monks, stupid freaking friars, was lighting incense in the hotel room, a praying for the fetuses, and set off the fire alarm? Because it darn sure didn't happen as a result of, because, you know, you would have thought it would have happened the night before when all, you know, it was just all us liberals there, right? Yeah. So about two-thirds of the way down, the alarm stops, and I get to trudge back up. Right-wingers. And again, white people. White people just awash, glowing in the dark with privilege, because all of these children from these schools were from schools that charge an arm and a leg to indoctrinate, inculcate, and otherwise warp the minds of these poor children. These privileged white people had their privileged children in the public schools from whence, the areas from whence they came would have been 1,000 times better off. But no. So that's nomination number 2. And I wonder, and of course this is just another one of those failings of the 1% for-profit media, why is the debate over essential privacy, human body privacy, why is that debate never explained as deriving from a fundamental urge by these religious monsters to enforce their religious doctrines upon the rest of us? Because there are religions out there that don't take a position on whether a woman or how a woman deals with, you know, a blastocyst. There are, in fact, religions upon this planet that view birth as a bad thing because it means that another soul has been recycled through the meat grinder to come down here and suffer some more in the illusion. So that a mother's choice not to do that might actually be viewed as the single most humane act she could do. But that's not good enough for these Christian lunatics. Because you will note, if you ever get into a discussion with one of these rat-laugh people, they cannot make their argument without reference to their religious doctrine. All life begins at conception, and how do you know that? Bible says so. Done. So in other words, mister, what you're saying is that you think the rest of us have to believe like you do. I didn't say that. Yes, you did. It is essentially impossible for any person who takes the position that a woman should not be able to have control over the reproductive functions of her body to make that argument without resort to religion and thereby admitting that their desire is to overturn the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Look, if you want to indoctrinate all of your young women from the moment they're tiny until they are the fully functional, reproductive, capable females, that they will be dirty, sinful, filthy harlots if they ever take control of the workings of their own insides, that's your business within the scope of your religion. But the thing these freaks don't understand is that it does not convey upon them some sort of right and or duty to compel us to feel the same way they do. And I use the word feel very specifically. I mean, for God's sakes, even the Quran says there is no compulsion in religion. Sorry, Christians can't claim that one. Because these right-to-lifers are all about compulsory religion. And they disgorged themselves, and they toured Washington, D.C., and today they had a march for life. Oh, it was a march for the fetuses, the poor little fetuses. And so there was Rick Santorum. Dog whistling to the faithful. On women and rape. Something about which he knows little or nothing in either instance. This is, of course, a man who consented to his wife having an abortion at 20 weeks, only to tell the rest of American women that they're not as special as Karen. and then went through the entire disgusting subterfuge of bringing a little fetus home that was no bigger, that wasn't even the size of the palm of his hand, and passing it off to their children as, this is your brother. Nah, this is a fish. This is a fetus. But they had to do that in order to get the cover for the fact that Karen's life would have ended should she have tried to carry that precious life to term. It would have killed her. And Rick Santorum and his wife made the choice in the privacy of their own counsel with the advice of their physician to terminate the pregnancy. And of course it turns out, I didn't get to cover this, it was while I was gone, but it turns out that before she got around to marrying the frothy mixture, Karen was shacked up for a number of years with a doc who did abortions and never had a problem with it. Oopsie. Yeah. But Rick Santorum wants America's women to know that he is fully prepared to speak on the issue of rape and reproductive rights.
On abortion, you did harden your position on that as you got older.
Well,
don't say harden to Rick Santorum.
Life, when I decided to run for public life, I was informed very quickly people wanted to know what my position on that was. So I actually went through the process of trying to better understand the facts. It became very clear to me that life begins at conception and persons are covered by the Constitution. And since life is human life is the same as a person, to me it was a pretty simple deduction to make that that's what the Constitution clearly intended to protect.
Do you really believe in every case it should be totally wrong? In the sense that I know that you believe even in cases of rape and incest, but you've got two daughters. If you had a daughter that came to you who'd been raped and was pregnant and was begging you to let her have an abortion, would you really look her in the eye and say no as her father?
I would do what every father would do, is to try to counsel your daughter to do the right thing.
It's an almost impossibly hypothetical thing to ask you.
My gracious, that was a little bit weaselly, wasn't it? I would do what every father has to do and counsel her to do the right thing. Well, what's the right thing? There are many of us who feel that the right thing to do for that young woman to do, if that's the choice that she makes, would be to continue on with her life and not let it be foreshortened with a family and a baby that she is not prepared to care for. But I'm sure that those monks and friars, wouldn't think well of that, them with their cell phones and their 8th century dresses.
But there will be people in that position who may share your religious values.
It's not a matter of religious values.
And they're looking at their daughter saying, how can
look at him trying to run away from it. Now, what did I just tell you? What did I just tell you? They cannot make this argument without resort to religion. It's not about religious values. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is.
Make her have this baby. Isn't it just going to ruin her life?
Well, you can make the argument that if she doesn't have this baby, if she kills her child.
If she kills her child. Objection, Your Honor. This freaked out semi-delusional witness is assuming facts, not in evidence. What's that? Yes, Your Honor, he's assuming that a 3-week-old or 2-week-old or 1-day-old agglomeration of cellular tissue is the same thing as a baby or a child or a toddler running about in the sandbox or on the playground. Oh, objection sustained.
That too could ruin her life. And this is not...
If she kills her child, it could ruin her life. Just so you're... Yeah.
Easy choice. I understand that. As horrible as the way that daughter and son was created, it still is her child. And whether she...
And, the rapist's child. It's, the half-rapist baby. And if some forms of criminal conduct are in fact genetically passed on from parent to child, then certain tendencies might. You're right, yeah.
Has that child or she doesn't, it will always be her child, and she will always know that. And so to embrace her and to love her and to support her and get her through this very difficult time, I've always, you know, I believe and I think.
See how I had to throw the I think in? Because the I believe comes first.
Now, the right approach is to accept this horribly created in this.
Oh, horribly created? Your God created that there, Brother Frothy. God does horrible things? Gonna have to have a talk with the bishop about that one, right? Oh, Ricky, you got some explaining to do.
Sense of rape, but nevertheless gift in a very broken way. But
you know, like on Christmas morning when you shake the box trying to figure out what things are, and you open the box later and it was a beautiful Waterford crystal vase, but now it's just a whole bunch of broken glass because you shook the vase because the man, you're right, yeah, you know, it was a gift, but it's a very broken gift.
Gift of human life. And accept what God is giving to you as you know.
Bingo! What did he say a few minutes ago? It's not about religion, but there's God. So it is about religion, isn't it? Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
We have to, in lots of different aspects of our life, we have horrible things happen. I can't think of anything more horrible, but nevertheless, we have to make the...
Wow! He can't think of anything more horrible than aborting a mass of tissue that was the product of the forcible sexual union of a victim and her rapist. He can't think of anything more horrible than that. Kind of reminds you of when George W. Bush said the worst thing that happened during his presidency was when Kanye West said he didn't like black people. Rick Santorum, this is not me, this is Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum said he can't think of anything more horrible than a raped woman choosing not to carry a rapist's baby to term. I can think of lots of things more horrible. Lots of things. I can think of those bodies floating face down in the fetid, toxic, stinking waters of the failed levees after Katrina. I can think, all libertarians just didn't want to do that. He wanted to go back through the beeping machine again. Because he's Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Dr. John noting, first of all, hats off to Rand Paul for not forcing some poor government employee to touch his disgusting parts. That surely would fall under hazardous duty. And second, I say, Rand, why not go sit in that pocket Chernobyl body scanner for a few hours? Go ahead. We'll wait. So I tweeted the story, and Sandra caught on to it and took the story for a walk, and lo and behold, there was more to the story. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was later rebooked on a different flight out of Nashville and was rescreened without incident, according to the Transportation Security Administration. Because you see, like other Republicans, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and son of Mrs. Paul, the fish stick heiress. Well, he's special. You know, he shouldn't have to put up with what we have to put up with, because obviously he's a patriotic American senator. Of course, the Paulites we're trying to twist this into some sordid fantasy. Here's the tweet from Moira Bagley. Just got a call from Sen Rand Paul. He's currently being detained by TSA in Nashville. No, he wasn't. He wasn't detained. There was no cuffing or roughing. There was no waterboarding, hot lights. They just told him he couldn't get on the flight because he wouldn't complete the security procedure. Oh, but then cranky old Ron Paul tweets, "My son, at Sen Rand Paul, being detained by TSA for refusing full-body pat-down after anomaly in body scanner in Nashville. More details coming." Jeebus. Cranky old Ron Paul followed up. "Hey, the police state in this country is growing out of control. One of the ultimate embodiments of this is the TSA that gropes and grabs our children, our seniors, and our loved ones and neighbors with disabilities." They're groping them with disabilities? How do you do that? "The TSA does all of this while doing nothing to keep us safe." Well, I don't know about anybody else, but if I'd been scheduled on that flight and I got to make it without Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, on it, I'd feel a damn sight safer. But as Sandra noted, here's the punchline. Later on, at Sen Rand Paul tweeted, "Today I'll speak to the March for Life in D.C. A nation cannot long endure without respect for the right to life. Our liberty depends on it." So as Sandra noted, yes indeed, he was leaving Nashville to go to Washington, D.C. to participate in a rally against your privacy. Because you see, these right-wing freaks have made it abundantly clear that they're not just after Roe versus Wade. They're after Griswold versus Connecticut. And Griswold versus Connecticut merely establishes the right to privacy and establishes the right to access to contraception, whether it be a pill or a sponge or a barrier or a condom. Guys, guess what? You've got a dog in the hunt now. Yep, they even want them off the walls in the truck stop restrooms. So at least Rand Paul was slowed up in his haste to get to D.C. in time to help help urge privileged, glow-in-the-dark white people onward to the destruction of our most fundamental liberty, to wit, the liberty over our own bodies, men and women alike. And of course, what the Obama administration did was sure enough bound to make some heads explode. The Obama administration moving in the past week or so to make contraception available almost across the board for all Americans. That's a good thing, right? To keep insurance companies. And, of course, the American Conference of Catholic Bishops answered, "Oh, hell no! We're the church. We've got to be able to keep people from not having babies. We'll go out of business if there's not more little superstitious babies born." Oy. you know, that's the sad reality of it. It's what they want. They want to compel us to share their strange faith. I find that more than a little bit disturbing. But again, that's not all. Since we're in Nashville, let's stay in Tennessee. Because there is a new assault, and this is how you can say, well, this is only understandable as purely Orwellian business. The teabaggers in Tennessee, and apparently they are legion therein. Some teabaggers have had themselves a press conference to issue their set of demands for the legislative session in Tennessee right now. The lead spokesman for this group of weirdos is a lawyer by the name of Hal Rounds. And he says he wants to get rid of any teaching in Tennessee schools about slavery. Nope. Just down the memory hole, slavery. He said those teabaggers plan to talk about, quote, an awful lot of made-up criticism about, for instance, the founders intruding on the Indians or having slaves or being hypocrites in one way or another. I don't want those founders being called hypocrites, even if they were. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, slave owners. Lots of slave owners. To the point that it was slavery itself that almost scuttled the Declaration of Independence because of Georgia and South Carolina. Well, we're just going to forget that. We're going to forget any business about, you know, running over the Indians' rights, too, because that never happened. Because teabaggers didn't want it to happen. They are trying to remake America before our very eyes. By making history itself disappear. More on the topic we've been on. Fritz writing in from Arkansas. While you were gone to D.C. via the Arkansas Times news blog in Little Rock, Arkansas, an abortion clinic in Little Rock, Arkansas had their supply of needed gases by a vendor, Wellsco, cut off, and said vendor has been alleged to demand back their tanks due to an anti-choice group videotaping women entering the clinic. Jesus Christ, the assault is full on. And this story also out of Arkansas. This is what you're dealing with when you're dealing with a Republican. This is what you're dealing with when you're dealing with a teabagger. This is what you're dealing with when you're dealing with a conservative. I will tell you straight up that we have We have a delightful little Siamese cat that runs around the house here. Her name's Mushu. It started out Mocha Shoe Latte. She was adopted to us, and that was her name. And it just sort of morphed into Mushu. And she's beautiful. And she is so blonde. She's such a delight. I've seen her spend 45 minutes stalking a stationary bottle cap before pouncing on it, and then recoiling in horror when it skittered away across the floor, and jumping on my lap in abject terror that she was about to be taken down by the pissed-off bottle cap. In the morning, when it's time to get up, she walks through the house, hollering, "Mom! Mom! Mom!" Calling Agnes. Agnes tells me that while I was gone, she would come back here to the door of the studio and go to the bedroom door and holler, wondering where I was. So I was more than a little shocked, more than a little horrified, more than a little torn up when I read this story about a man named Jake Burris, who's from Central Arkansas. Family values man, Jake Burris. He's got 4 kids. Jake Burris is the campaign manager for Ken Aden. Ken Aden is a Democratic congressional candidate running in this election in Arkansas. Jake Burris and his 4 kids live in Russellville, Arkansas. And they were coming back home last night when one of his little children discovered their family cat, which looks to be a little Siamese, discovered their family cat dead on the front porch with the side of its head bashed in and an eyeball hanging out of its socket. It had been laid out on the porch, and scrawled on the side of the dead cat was the word, in all caps, liberal. Mr. Aden released a statement saying, "To kill a child's pet is just unconscionable. As a former combat soldier, I've seen the best of humanity and the worst of humanity. Whoever did this is definitely part of the worst of humanity." There is no depth to which a conservative, to which a Republican, to which a libertarian, to which a teabagger will not stoop. I searched around a little bit after reading the story, trying to find a little more detail. No one is calling this an act of terrorism, but it is. It most surely is liberal. Monitor your evening news. Monitor CNN, CNBC, Fox, CNN, headline news, even MSNBC. I don't know, maybe Rachel or maybe Keith over at Current TV will have this story. But don't look for it on CBS's Evening News. Don't look for it on ABC's Evening News. Don't look for it on NBC's Evening News.
Because after all, if they reported this story, somebody might call them liberal themselves. A cat. A child's pet. A family member in its own right. And I'll bet you a dollar to a donut that whoever did this believes in the right to life. Right? Poor little cat. There are photos. Or there is a photo. I didn't send it along. Just couldn't. So that ends this Moran Monday filibobster. We will move to the portion of the program now where you bring your nominations, your thoughts, your conversation. Email coming in from Robert Phase 5 in Australia. He says, hey, Bob, first day of the week. If five people put in $10 each, I'll put in 50. Let's finish January in the black. Hope everybody's feeling better. Thanks, Robert. Thank you very, very much. If that actually happened, we would take care of this evening's fundraising like that. Thank you very, very much, Robert. Kim writing in, she says, groping the disabled. A man in our community up in Michigan had a colostomy bag, and they did search him not once but two times on different flights. They did pull the bag from his body. I think that qualifies as disabled. Yeah. Yeah. Darlene, with regard to Santorum and how he would advise his daughter, sure he'd advise his daughter. Santorum is evil and a liar. I don't buy it for 1 minute that he'd make his daughter have the baby. He already let his wife abort. What if his daughter got pregnant from a consensual union? What if the man she slept with was black? Oh, right. He'd make her have the baby. Don't think so. Yeah, me neither. Might be a busy night this evening. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You know how to reach the program, right? Direct dial number is 304-658-3333 on your nickel, that is. On ours, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Cool Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday edition of the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the beginning of the second hour. Yes, indeedy. And we will go straight away to the phones, only momentarily. That I promise. A quick resort to email, however. Because Phil, known to you in the chat room, you ever been to the chat room? If you haven't, you really ought to try it out. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's there. It's another one of those things that we provide to sort of make the whole experience a little more interactive. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free. It's easy. Registration is simple. Jump on in. You'll have a dandy good time. Great little neighborhood in there. You would know Phil as Ibid from the chat room. And Phil dropped a note and said, in the past, you made a request for us non-U.S. listeners to write and give our opinions as to what we think of the goings-on in your country. I felt obliged to write as I was so amazed at the lack of priorities and the absurd nature of how the law is applied to corporations. A few days ago, a particular corporation had its assets seized and its operations halted. The U.S. justice system went to extraordinary lengths to seize the executives of this particular company. It was as far as forcing U.S. laws and coercing foreign sovereign governments to abide by these laws. It demanded that executives of this corporation be seized by the government of New Zealand and extradited to the U.S. to face charges for their heinous crimes. What could possibly cause the U.S. to go to such extraordinary lengths? Did this particular corporation cause the deaths of its employees by sheer negligence, as was the case of BP Oil and Massey Coal? Did this corporation unleash untold destruction of the environment like the two companies just mentioned? What could this company possibly do that was so illegal and destructive that it could bring the wrath of the U.S. justice system upon it? The answer is, it was a file hosting website. Yes, I speak of Mega Upload. I was appalled at the ferociousness of this assault on Mega Upload, a company that neither caused the deaths of anybody, nor did it contribute at all to the degradation of the planet. In the meantime, corporations like Massey and BP continue to devastate the planet with their toxic assault in a never-ending pursuit of profit. Yet these two fine bastions of business and their ilk are left virtually unscathed. The sheer hypocrisy is mind-boggling. Is the U.S. justice system telling the world that somebody downloading a video or a song is a far more serious offense than, say, what happened with an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico or the devastation in the Appalachians? This lopsided prioritizing is what will be the wreck and ruin of the United States,
And unfortunately, because the Earth is a closed system, it will also bring the wreck and ruin of us all. God help us from these insane psychopaths. Signed, Phil. God, there's so much truth to that. And that's not even to mention another case out there that is just mind-boggling, to use Phil's term. And that is the story of Richard O'Dwyer in the UK. Sought for extradition by the government of the United States by Attorney General Eric Holder. Because he ran a website that had links. There was no copyrighted material on his website. None whatsoever. But he ran a website that had links to other sites. And the United States is demanding his extradition hither to face the rough and merciless justice of the United States as delivered upon folks with no strength, with no defense. What he did is not even illegal in his home in the United Kingdom. But the Obama administration wants him because the greed merchants in Hollywood want him. The whole thing is being roundly and sharply criticized in the UK and should be here. Can you imagine the terror of being a 20-something young man whose only crime is putting up a website? And he is wanted by the United States government, a government that gleefully tortures those in its custody? In all honesty, under such circumstances, it would be difficult not to contemplate suicide. Andy writing in, concerning Rick Santorum, Pennsylvania's Universal Health Services, according to Rick Santorum, don't worry, your church will save you, just go to church. It's just that everybody can't have health care. The man's a shyster, the ultimate shyster, ex-board member of PA's Universal Health Services, UHS, taking in a good $380,000 in a few years, bought and paid for. Also, UHS was one of his biggest campaign contributors. It was number two, the backsheesh in our corrupt system. As Alan Grayson said, the repig-licking plan, don't get sick. If you do get sick, die quickly. But the fetus, that's a different story. Mr. Rick is hypocritical scum. Couldn't have said it better myself. Dr. John in New York, today in gas drilling. Bob, two quick things from the world of fracking. First, the Energy Department has officially revised the estimate of the amount of natural gas locked in the Marcellus Shale formation way downward, like from 400 trillion cubic feet in reserve to 140 trillion. That's a 60% reduction. And second, Chesapeake Energy, a major fracker in Pennsylvania with its greedy eyes on New York, said today it'll cut its production by 8% this year. So time for those pro-frackers to explain again how this massive gas reserve will lead to perpetual jobs and perpetual growth. John? Brother? Hold not thy breath. 12 minutes past the hour and we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
How are you, Jim?
Pretty good, I guess. Just a quick note here about several things here. I had a cat one time when I lived in Columbia, and I had picked her up in a place called Olympia, like the old mill village of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just a little gray cat, and took her home. First cat I ever had, because we were dog people when I grew up. And I guess my parents were somewhat allurophobic. But anyway, I came home from work, and I couldn't find Miss Kitty. That was her name. And I looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, and I saw the window was open, and she'd gotten out. And then I heard something, oh, must have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I gotten back in, and she was there, and her face had been smashed in. And her eye was the size of an egg.
Mm.
And she was still living. Just amazing. I took her to the vet. He put her to sleep to see what he could do. And it came out with having 2 shunts drilled into her upper and lower jaw. The eye was, of course, removed. And, of course, 6 weeks later, those shunts were removed, and she survived. But this was a hate crime.
Yes.
Directed against me because of the cat. And from that point forward, on occasion, she would wear an eye patch. And the strange thing about it was I had been to a concert in New York with Todd Rundgren. And there was a part in the album where you could send your name of your pet in. And they would send you a printout of Todd Rundgren's face. And her name was on the printout, Miss Kitty. So I know what it's like to come home and find that some freakazoid, a horrible person, has directed their hatred against you. Vis-a-vis a defenseless animal. To tell you the truth, if I could have found the person who did it, and the vet told me it was done by blunt trauma, he said there's nothing that could have happened by another animal that could have done this. He said it was either a club or a golf club or something like that. If I could have found the person who did this, I would have taken my father's Beretta and I would have killed it.
It's hard not to feel that way.
The person who did that with no feeling of compunction whatsoever. And if the first shot hadn't have killed him, I would have put it right through the back of their head.
Well, look at this present situation. Tormenting an animal because you have a political difference with another individual.
Oh, it wasn't political.
No, but this is. This latest story is.
Well,
to take a magic marker and write liberal across the corpse of the cat?
Well, yeah. I mean, they could have written liberal. They could have written queer. They could have written any number of things up on it, you know. It just depends on their favorite type of hate. And how anyone could take pleasure and doing something like that is just beyond the absolute.
Well, whoever would have done that would have known that this individual had 4 children and would have known that that it was a family pet, a family member, and would have done what they did in full knowledge of what they were doing to that family.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean,
But this is just, you know, this is just another notation in the ongoing ongoing series of how sick right wingers are. It was in Arkansas, after all, just a few years ago, that a gunman walked in and blew away the chairman of the state Democratic Party. I mean, there is to a certain extent open warfare already in this country.
Well, there has been. And like I say, I could have been just as evil and just as cruel as the person who did that to Miss Kitty. Because, honestly and truly, it would not have bothered me one bit to have blown that person away. Not one bit. And that's just my character. Because I've been around guns a long time, seen a lot of people shot, and you become used to that sort of thing. I'm not offering that as an excuse.
No, I understand. No, I understand everything you're saying, Jim. But more, the thing,
Well, arguing about something like this, or even discussing it, is like trying to compute the value of pi. It's a transcendental figure with no resolution. It's just something that is involved in all of us. And, yeah, that's just my reaction to it. And I understand what you've been talking about as far as what was under this family. And as far as other things that will continue to be done to people who don't agree with these people who seem to take it upon themselves to do anything, anywhere, anytime. And they have no sense of compassion. And as far as I'm concerned, their souls are dead. They never had a soul. I just cannot understand that type of thing. And I've seen a lot of horror, and I've seen a lot of death, and a lot of bad things happen to living creatures. What else can I say?
I know. I wish there was some way to understand. Because, see, the point of me mentioning, Jim, that this will not show up on anyone's evening news is because it will receive the same treatment, if it did, that every other story of horrors perpetrated by right-wingers receives. Well, that person was crazy. That's not how all Republicans are.
No.
It's unfair to bring that up and talk about this person writing liberal on it, because that makes it sound like Republicans are hateful and mean and evil.
Well, these people aren't crazy. I mean, Hitler wasn't crazy. I mean, Hitler was number one. He was just downright mean. He was stupid. But he wasn't crazy. Neither were any of the others that they hanged at Nuremberg and who participated in all types of horrible things, not only against...
Well, you know, I go back to this, what was his name, Adkins, who shot up the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Knoxville, Tennessee. Now, that guy is in prison for the rest of his natural-born days. Of course, he was white, so they wouldn't give him the death penalty. But he wasn't adjudicated to be insane. He was driven to what he did by all the filth, by all the hate, by all the... I mean, the guy had Bernard Goldberg and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly on his bookshelves.
Oh, sure. No doubt.
The BTK killer from a number of years ago who terrorized Topeka, Kansas. When it turned out, when they found out who it was, it turned out to be an upstanding member of the community who was as right-wing can be, a registered Republican who voted in every possible election and voted Republican and was a part of a Boy Scout advisor. And yet we cannot, for the life of us, literally, or apparently of our pets, we cannot have a sane and sober discussion about what it is in the right-wing mindset that makes it okay to do these things. And that just means it'll keep happening. And that is the sin of the whole thing, that we will allow it to keep happening.
Well, I think it was said once by Christ that I send you out as sheep among wolves. And there are lots of wolves out there, that's for sure.
And it would seem that in this day and age, Jim, the vast majority of them vote a certain way.
Well, they're going to vote a certain way. It's because, number one, it's either in favor of their own economic interest, or they have been brainwashed to the point that they can't think any other way.
I think it is far more the latter than the former, Jim.
You mean they've been literally brainwashed and
yeah, because
led into
the guy in East Tennessee left a lengthy diatribe in writing. And he said that, you know, he couldn't take out the leading liberals of the country, so he'd go and he'd take out some of the liberals who put him in office. Now, this guy was an out-of-work truck driver. So he certainly wasn't voting his own economic interest. His economic interest would have been best served by having those aforementioned liberals in office who actually wanted to not see him devolve into a miserable shell of an existence.
A penury.
Exactly. So
well, it just goes to show that you know, you've got a lot of hate, and it seems to be governed by some type of force multiplier.
And that force multiplier has a name, Jim. That force multiplier is named Beck, is named Hannity, is named Limbaugh, and Savage, and Bortz. And and unlike liberal or progressive broadcasting, every little two-bit radio station in the country has some person on staff who for 3 hours a day on a local basis will get behind the microphone and spew vile, hateful, right-wing vomit. And you know doggone good and well this to be true because it's on your radio. I don't mean it's on your radio, but it's on the radio where you live every blessed day.
I understand what you're saying. Well, you know, we have men in submarines who are given the job of pushing buttons to make the unimaginable and the unthinkable happen. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, the defense posture of our country is concerned and that type of thing. Or as they used to have guys who sat in missile silos before they abandoned all the hard missile silos. I mean,
I know a guy who did that.
Yeah, me too. And you know, that was their job. And you know, as bad as that job is, I can understand to a certain extent exactly they had to do what they had to do. But no one has to go ahead and voluntarily, without direction or order from above, do some of the stuff and say some of the things that these people are saying.
Yeah, and that's the point. The right wing issues those marching orders, Jim. As sure as God made little green apples, they issue those marching orders. But they hide behind weasel words, and when they're caught, they say things like Flimball says, like, "My friends, I am only an entertainer."
No, he's not an entertainer. He's a hate monger. He's nothing more than Father Conklin or Joseph Goebbels or...
Right, as is Beck. But of course, exactly. if you try to call any of these monsters on it, I didn't do anything. That guy was crazy.
Oh yeah, I've heard that too. It's so easy for the craziest of all to call other people crazy just because they don't agree with them or because they can, if they were given enough time on the air to make them look like the assholes they really are.
You remember the guy who came to his door and shot up a bunch of police up in Pennsylvania? Can't remember his name.
No, I can't either.
Well, he specifically said that he was led to do what he did by what he had heard on the radio. Or there was the guy who was, lucky for us, all liquored up before, you know, had to drink him some courage before he left, but he had been listening to Glenn Beck profusely before he grabbed his guns and headed for the Tides Foundation in San Francisco, California, because Glenn Beck had told him that they were progressives and they were communists.
And so he got off because of his state of intoxication.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't think he got off at all, and that's the point. He wasn't crazy, no matter how much these the people like Beck and Limbaugh and so forth say that they are. By the way, Andy writing in says, if I were on the jury, no way would Jim be culpable with what that individual did to his poor defenseless cat. It shows a disregard for life that cannot be tolerated.
That cat lived on for another 15 years, Bob.
Bless her heart.
Miss Kitty. I want to bring up something else. I saw this on PBS last night. It's called Crony Capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And they had David Stockman on there.
Yeah, and how fascinating it is that, you know, there's Reagan's director of the Office of Management and Budget, and he's calling these people out.
He did back in 1981, because after, you know, he became OMB director, Reagan gave him his marching orders, and that was to go through like a 15,000-page document of the budget, and to take out everything possible that wasn't essential except for, you know, defense and stuff like that. And, of course, at this particular point, Stockman was, I'm not sure, I think he was a congressman maybe, I'm not sure. Please correct me, I'm sure someone will. But nonetheless, after getting into OMB directorship and looking at things and really looking at the situation financially, and this guy isn't stupid. He just basically gave an interview to the Atlantic Monthly in 81 saying that supply-side economics just didn't work. Laffer did not work. Voodoo economics did not work. That even though people who had wealth were given tax relief did not mean that they were going to turn that relief from taxes into jobs for people less fortunate than themselves. And of course, Stockman was called in and, you know, basically by Reagan's chief of staff, and I can't remember who the guy was, who he had so damn many, Reagan or whatever their names were, it was a long time ago. But I mean, Stockman, you know, began to realize that he wrote a book called The Power of Politics, which I've referenced on this show many times, as he and I have been talking. And I've urged people to read it. And it was basically Stockman's condemnation of supply-side economics and how it is a failed scheme of economic reasoning. It goes against any type of Keynesian economics or legitimate economics that were ever planned. And interestingly enough, he was talking with Bill Moyers last night on the program, and stated that during the Bush administration, that all the big banks, you know, and we're sort of jumping around here, and I don't mean to lose transition here, but all the big banks from 2001 to 2009, during the Bush administration, had made like $77 billion, okay? And during the first 2.5 years of the Obama administration, their profits had increased from $77 to $83 billion.
Wow.
And also that all of the chiefs of staff that Obama has had, all of these people have been big bankers on Wall Street. And Stockman predicted, and he has another book out called Crony Capitalism, that the meltdown that occurred in 2008 was just a precursor to the real meltdown that would happen in years to come. And that basically what Mr. Stockman said was that the average citizen in this country has no lobbyist. We don't have any representation in Washington. That our 535 members of Congress are bought and sold and paid for. That Main Street has no representation. And how many times back in 2004, ever since you and I have been talking, have I told you it isn't Main Street that drives this country or for whom our government has any compassion? It is K Street and Wall Street.
It's
these
the truth.
People are so driven by their efforts to give corporations personalities and to exempt them from penalties under the law for which they should have been put away a long time ago. I'm talking about the leading CEOs and people like this and how they've just gotten away with murder and have been bailed out, not by themselves because they were engaged in all types of hedge fund activities and all types of crap that were just as bad as the stock market was before the 1929 crash, okay?
Yeah.
And these people have not been brought to account. I mean, they've done things that were probably Madoff look like an angel, and yet they've been able to get away with it. I mean, they nailed poor Martha Stewart for insider trading. Which was I thought was a put up job in the first place. I happen to like Martha Stewart, and I think they did it because they just wanted to make a sacrilege a sacrificial lamb of her because she was engaged in something that she, well, she got caught in. I did feel sorry for her. Even wrote her a letter when she was in prison up here in Alderson. But nonetheless, you know, it's just amazing what these people are getting away with, and crony capitalism is going to be the driving force in this country. And that we just don't have any representatives that really truly represent the interests of the people.
And it was, it was inspiring to me on Friday, Jim, to get to talk to Bob Edgar from Common Cause. And he seems to understand it, the four square, that the money is the root of all evil in our attempt at self-government. And at least they are directing their energies that way, which means at least they have an idea of what a solution to the problem would look like.
Well, I don't know what solution there is to it. And I have always agreed with Gore Vidal, who wrote long ago, there's only one party in this country. And that is, and he called it the property party, and I'll call it the money party or the big corporations party.
The cash party.
Yeah, one of it is Democrat and one of it is Republican. And, you know, we don't have representation in Congress anymore, in my opinion. I hate to say this, but I believe it's true. And these people have no sense of compassion, no sense of compunction, and they have no sense of what I would consider to be guilt, no sense of fair play, no sense of humanity as far as what they have as opposed to what you don't have. And, you know, as you said before, I guess they do want it all.
They do. And yet at the same time, it's fascinating. You're familiar with the Economic Forum at Davos, Switzerland, right?
Yes, sir.
In an address, that's going on right now. And in an address there, Klaus Schwab, who is the host and founder of the World Economic Forum, made what I thought was a shocking statement, at least for the age in which we live. He said, "We have a general morality gap. We are over-leveraged. We have neglected to invest in the future. We have undermined social coherence, and we are in danger of completely losing the confidence of future generations. We are in an era of profound change that urgently requires new ways of thinking instead of more business as usual." And he continued, trying to find the quote here because it was stunning. He went on, he continued and described the present capitalist system as, and these are his words, outdated and crumbling. Solving problems in the context of outdated and crumbling models will only dig us deeper into the hole.
Well, I think Ewan Lennon referred to it as ultra-capitalism and how it would collapse in upon itself.
And I think that's some of what we're viewing here. Because the people who have transformed it from economic theory into religious orthodoxy, the proto-Randians and the anarcho-Randians or whatever we care to call them, the ones who worship at the shrine of Gordon Gekko, for want of a better image,
yep,
are willing to burn the entire planet to the ground.
Yeah, and now they have a sequel to the original movie back in 1987. What's it called? Money, what? I don't remember the title.
Oh, the first one was just Wall Street, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then they have one, Money Talks or something like this, and when Gekko comes back and after being in prison for 20 years or whatever.
Probably the most telling or most fascinating thing I read all weekend was the New York Times article about, it was called How the U.S. Lost Out on iPhone Work. And on a monitor screen, it's 7 pages long, which is a pretty huge article for a newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And it is detailed, Jim. I highly recommend you read it because it details a manufacturing process and a manufacturing paradigm that is mind-boggling to consider. Because we're talking about factory cities that are larger than most cities in the United States. Foxconn City in China has some 300,000 people living in dormitories around the factory.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
They put nets around the buildings. So
to stop the jumpers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This I know. It is, well, there's not a whole lot of good news tonight, is there? Unfortunately, it's just the way things have transitioned over the past, 30, 40 years, maybe. Is it that long? Since people have been going in this direction, since our financial betters have taken such control that they've become absolute dictators. It's just really mind-boggling to me. Just mind-boggling of how quickly something like this can happen. And they may think that their structures will last a long time. But I don't think that they will.
Well, I found from that particular article, Jim, there was a pull quote from an Apple executive speaking on condition of anonymity. And the Apple executive said, "We don't have an obligation to solve America's problems." And if that isn't transnational global capitalism in a nutshell, I don't know what is.
Well, they don't have any responsibility to solve our problems. The only responsibility they have is to market a product and to sell it to the at the highest price and make more and more money. That's exactly what they have. But don't they realize that at one time, this thing in the future, nothing lasts forever. I mean, empires don't last forever.
Yeah, you kind of want to print out Ozymandias and mail it off to mail it off to the folks at Apple, right? Apple. I mean, Apple is a low hanging fruit.
Statues of Memnon, exactly. That Percy Bysshe Shelley wrote about. Yes, exactly. I know what you're saying.
And mail it off to all of the because. They like the industrial economies of scale that they can leverage in China because, China has billions of people who are sitting around available for whatever the autocratic government decides for them to do.
Exactly.
And that, that looks really good right now. But what happens, Jim, if the worm turns even an iota?
Well, they might be terribly disappointed in their future outcomes and what they planned on for their progeny.
It was interesting. One of the other things brought up in this article was that Apple could never manufacture the iPhone in the United States because there aren't enough engineers. Now, they went on to say that they don't need four-year degreed engineers, but they don't need high school diploma people either. They need somebody with just enough knowledge to work for just little enough money and have the skill set they need to get everything done and get away with paying next to nothing. And that's why they say there's just not enough of us willing to do that here in the United States. So I guess the takeaway from that is that we haven't gotten desperate enough.
Well, what they want are technicians, people who basically have a knowledge scope that's limited to their own technical field and who can do that, but there's more to the human psyche than just being a technocrat and just being a technician.
I couldn't agree more. David in Tennessee writing in with regard to Klaus Schwab over at the World Economic Forum. He said, "Well, Klaus, stay off small airplanes, forget that ski trip, and for God's sake, eat only food you watch cooked." Because, talking like he did is speaking heresy to the people who have come to the point where they treat capitalism as some sort of received orthodoxy.
Well, it's a false god. And it's a false god that has clay feet. And, you know, it's mammon, whatever you want to call it. And these have been referenced in books that we've talked about also on this program. But it's just people who have lost any sense of compunction, humanity, or compassion for anything. And I don't know how long it can last. But if you read Stockman's book, Crony Capitalism, he doesn't give it a whole great deal of longevity. And he predicts a dire end for it. I mean, for example, 100 years ago, and I don't mean to take up too much of your time here, but, and I hate people who do, because there are other people who have things to contribute. But I'll say this quickly. I mean, look at British social structure 100 years ago. And look at what World War I did to that.
With World War II following on its heels, and with the end of World War II, that's when Europe began to look around and say, we've got to have some system in place that addresses the needs of everyone and not just the privileged few.
Exactly. I mean, these people during the Edwardian Age, the Gilded Age, or whatever you want to call it, they thought they had it made. 100 servants per household and manors, which were quite beautiful, and I love the stories about them because they're beautiful costume set pieces. They're very interesting to me. But I see what happened to them and, you know, how that passed away. And though these people thought, even as late as the summer of 1914, in July of 1914, that their way of life would last forever, it didn't. And incidentally, there was a program on ETV following the Stockman thing about this particular subject, which I find very interesting. And yet there are people who wish to destroy PBS and things like that.
Yeah, they're the same people who kill cats and leave them laying on Arkansas doorsteps, Jim. That's the whole point.
They want to destroy anything that isn't filled with a bunch of drivel and crap and these reality programs and all this crap. It's just crazy.
Well, Jack wrote in from Shreveport, Jim, and he said, your conversation with Jim led me to recall this recent article in the February Smithsonian. He said, where does all the hatred come from? And it's an article called Revisiting the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich under History and Archaeology, you know, William Shirer's seminal work.
Oh, yeah.
And Jack sends along a good chunk of it. But the part of it that grabbed me is this, where the author writes, yes, perhaps one corollary that almost need not be spelled out, and that is this. There is danger in giving up our sense of selfhood for the illusory unity of a frenzied mass movement, of devolving from human to herd for some homicidal abstraction. It is a problem we can never be reminded of enough, and for this we will always owe William Shirer a debt of gratitude. And that is true. And it goes back to something that I heard Van Jones say a year or more ago when he said, the right wing talks about individualism, but they act collectively. Whereas we on our side talk about collectivism and act individually.
Yes, William L. Shirer and the rise and fall of the Third Reich and also the decline and fall of the French Republic, these are colossal works. I mean, Bob, I don't know if you've read either one of those.
I've read Shirer, yes.
Well, I mean, I have never seen a journalist, and that's what he basically was. He went to work for CBS. I think William Paley hired him. Before that, he was out of work living with his wife in Spain. But nonetheless, he witnessed these things that happened in Nazi Germany. And I have never, and believe you me, as far as historiography is concerned, I mean, that was part of my training, or my education, not my training. I have never seen one historian write with the detail. I mean, this guy doesn't start with chapters. He goes with chapter part one, chapter part two. You're familiar with the structure of the book, I'm sure.
Yes, yes.
I mean, he covers everything. And
it is surgical in its application, yes.
And it is incredible, the insight that man provided. And we owe him a world of gratitude. But how many people are even reading what he wrote now? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as a sort of a World War II historian buff, if I want to go back to a source book, that's the book I go back to before I go to anybody else. And then if I want to go into anything further, I will go into his footnotes, because God knows the pages involving his sources, direct, indirect, or primary, secondary, are probably a tenth of the book.
Well, you know what? I talk from time to time about the fact that I have been co-opted by the Kindle, and I definitely need to get that on mine, because one of the nice things about the Kindle is that you can bounce back and forth from footnote to regular text very, very easily.
Yes, you can. I have a Kindle. I also have a Kindle Fire. But, you know, there is nothing. Now, I'm being old-fashioned here. I am old-fashioned.
Oh, are you going to fly your Luddite flag, Jim?
Whatever. I like the sight of books.
Oh, I do, too. I do, too.
And, you know, as far as the Kindle is concerned, it's convenient, and it has certain things that are definitely advantageous.
It's handy as hell back here behind the microphone, believe you me.
Sure it is. Absolutely. But, you know, as far as looking at books, I regard books as friends. I regard books as contributions made by humanity and the very best in humanity. And, of course, some of them are the very worst in humanity. I mean, I have a copy of Mein Kampf. And
because it all bears documenting and it bears remembering, which, of course, makes all the more horrifying the story of the Tennessee teabaggers who want to make sure that no little child in any public school in Tennessee is ever told about slavery or the genocide against the first peoples who lived here.
Well, exactly. And the thing about it is these books tell us things that we need to remember and we need to know. And if people had only, for example, read Mein Kampf, as turgid and as hard as it is to get through. I mean,
it's a march.
But he said exactly what he was going to do. He made no point about it. He never lied about any of it.
Right, and you know, it's the same thing with present right-wing political leaders. They can posture and they can prance and they can appear in these debates, and Newt Gingrich can get all the pissy with John King as if it was John King's fault for merely repeating what Newt's second wife had already said. But the fact of the matter is, Newt, Mitt, Santorum, Ron Paul, they have all made abundantly clear what they wish to do, not for, but to this nation, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely.
And shame on anybody who thinks otherwise, because they are nothing if not self-deluded.
But, you know, here's the thing. When I hear these people speak, and when I read what some of them have written, I take it for gospel. And I believe, you know, if you put this in print, I believe you're going to do exactly what you say you're going to do. And you're going to say what you're going to, you're going to do what you say.
Yes.
And then, when I watch some of these, like Newt Gingrich or whatever the fuck his name is, I hate that bastard. And, you know, what an asshole. What is just a complete and utter asshole. And I don't normally engage in this type of dialogue. I do not.
Sometimes it's in the moment and it's irresistible, and I understand that, Jim.
And him defending the sanctity of marriage or this other stuff, and they jump all over that correspondent who referenced directly his own past, he couldn't stand it. And yet I saw those people in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, they clapped, didn't they, Jim? Oh, I thought they were just going to reach some sort of orgiastic delight.
I thought I was back at one of the Nuremberg Party Congress rallies back in the 30s.
Sure.
At Zeppelin Field. That's exactly what it reminded me of. And I said, my God, are these
But that wasn't the first manifestation of it, Jim.
I know that.
They had done the same thing when Ron Paul was talking about leaving uninsured people to die in a church floor. They cheered at the idea of Rick Perry executing more people than any other governor in the United States.
In an orgiastic frenzy.
Exactly. And at the same time, if you poll any given one of them on the way out the door, they will profess to be lifelong the followers of Jesus.
The only thing I can say to these people is what I think Christ may say to them one day. I know ye not. Depart from me.
Ye wicked and accursed, for the lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels.
I think you quoted it pretty accurately, my friend, but like I say, it's just incredible to see how, these people are not intelligent, and they are not thinking. And it's if, I don't know, there's some type of horrible, horrible specter that has descended upon this country and the world. And
Churchill in 1948 at the school which I first attended when I left for college, not in 1948, mind you, said, an iron curtain has descended across the face of Eastern Europe.
From Stettin to the Baltic.
Well, in 2012, Jim, may we safely say that a hateful curtain has descended across the face of the United States of America?
Yeah, it has, absolutely. A curtain of hatred, of no compassion, no civility, and a type of doctrine that is completely inimical to any type of religious humanity or compassion.
From Houston on the Gulf to Norfolk on the Atlantic seaboard.
I mean, I can't think of any religious figure, whether it's the Buddha, whether it's Christ, or anyone else, who would want this type of thing to descend on any portion of humanity.
No, and in fact, most of the world's great religions, at least in their founding documents, would say that these are signs of a civilization, of a society, of a culture in profound descent and decay and devolution.
Exactly. Headed toward collapse. I mean, you and other callers get into the particulars and the day-to-day things of this, and I understand what you're saying. But as far as the overall picture of the whole situation is concerned, it's not headed toward a good end. And it's going to be very, very soon. And I can understand why so many people are so disillusioned. And they actually expect on 21 December of this year for there to be a total world collapse. And belief in the Mayan calendar. And belief that, you know, it's time, the age of man is ended, as he knows it. I can understand why people believe this. And, you know, and to tell you the truth, I'm one of them. I do believe that things will happen, and they are beginning to happen more and more.
Oh, I think awful things are going to happen, but I think they're happening as a result of anthropomorphic or anthropogenetic causes.
Yeah, that's a good word.
We have the straight razor at our own throats, and we're insisting on sawing instead of shaving, Jim.
I think you're right. And unfortunately, it's just, it's headed toward a bad situation. It really is. I mean, there's so many things that are happening to the planet because of the, lack of stewardship of humanity and because of, destruction of natural resources that are finite that are causing all types of force multipliers to destroy our air and poison our water and kill our children and cause horrible diseases to develop. And
we are learning a master class in the power of exponentiality, Jim. That's what it boils down to. Whether it be compounded interest or exponential growth of trouble.
Powers of Ten, exactly. That was another thing we can get into. There's a good film called Powers of Ten directed toward this end. But
exactly. Jim,
here, let somebody else talk.
Have yourself a great evening. Thanks for all you've brought this evening.
Well, it's not much, but it's just simply my own feelings. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Take care, Jim. Bye now. Jim, calling from here inside, here behind the cornbread curtain. And we will keep things moving. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hey, David. What's up?
How you doing?
Getting along, I guess. Kind of glad to be home. I like doing those things on the road, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You things get kind of out of control, and you don't have complete ownership of the situation, and I guess I'm just old enough that I don't like that.
Well, that's why, you know, so many people, you know, we look at someone like a stand-up comedian or a rock band or an entertainer that has to go on the road 260 days, and we don't understand the concept of what that does. We immediately say, well, that would be cool to be a comedian, but we really don't think about, like...
We don't understand that there's a reality, to standing on a stage... In St. Louis and hollering, "Hello, Cleveland!"
It's the same reality. We look at people like politicians and authors who have to go on book tour and they have to repeat the same thing over and over and over again. Just basically, buy my book, buy my brand, buy my. How can this even be healthy for us? It can't.
It isn't. I don't think it's good for the people who have to do it. Ask most of them, and they'll tell you it's a mind-numbing, exhausting process. I suppose you caught the little burgeoning blow-up once again between Bourdain and Paula Deen, did you not?
I think so. I'm not sure what you're
on the same day that she announced that she has been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Paula Deen announced her new line of product to help people with diabetes. So Bourdain tweeted, this is a close paraphrase, "Think I'll go break my leg so I can go out and go into the cane business."
I think the Travel Channel has bit off more than they can chew with somebody like Bourdain, who's outspoken like that. And I'm trying to think how many things he holds back from, and I can only imagine the list.
Well, if you saw the Christmas special.
Yeah, I did see the Christmas special.
The end there. This is for Paula.
And I'm glad to see that The Layover is coming back next for another series. It's going to be a continuing series. It's not just going to be a one-off.
I think it's a good show. Does that mean that we don't get any more no reservations or?
No, they're going to do that. I understand what this is. This is like lots of footage from the cutting room floor, and they didn't want to make it too much for DVD extras, Bob.
Too much for the director's cut?
Yeah, I mean they had to make it into a show, you know. I can see why they did that. There's so much. I mean, if you film that much, you might as well let it fly. It's the same way I feel about a lot of music, and that's a hard thing for a lot of people to deal with, to release that much. You know, you think about how many people it takes, how long it takes for someone to release just one album, or release one film, because they're so terrified of judgment now, and the fact that it's so easy to judge people in these days. And, you know, Joe Rogan was talking about this podcast, and he says it's getting worse by the day with people in these forums, and how that's dealing with a lot of people who have to deal with this constantly. And a lot of people don't want to be comedians because of the continuing just judgmental culture. It's hyper judgmental now.
Well, you make me feel a little bad, David, because I started the program gooning on the Capitol steps.
Oh, you know,
too sensitive about that? Or I mean, come on, hillbilly jokes in 2012?
I wouldn't say you're too sensitive on it, but I would say This is also another subject of debate with the comedians. And there's certain guidelines now, and there are more and more that going into comedy clubs, what you can say and what you can't say. If you keep pushing those guidelines, though, Bob, it becomes a serious problem because it's like,
Well, I mean, the Capitol Steps, for instance, they do political satire. So, you know, they riff on Obama, they riff on Harry Reid, they riff on the Republican Clown Car Act, they riff, you know. Where does a cheap-ass, one-off hillbilly joke fit in cutting-edge, biting political satire?
I can understand that, but the one thing that I would say to you in response to that is if culturally it's other places and, say, you know, they make an English joke about dentistry or say they make a Maine joke about, I don't know, fishermen or lobsters or whatever the usual lumberjacks or whatever the usual thing is, moose. I mean, where's the line where it becomes what I'm asking?
I understand that. And for me, the line is at black jokes because of the oppression that's gone on there.
Mm-hmm.
Polish and other Eastern European jokes because of the history of naked ethnic hatreds that attended their immigrant arrival in this country in the late 19th and early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Hispanic jokes because, you know, they haven't been shat upon enough. And yeah, hillbilly jokes because real hillbillies really are being poisoned. And there really is a dentition problem here that's not because we don't know about the toofer brush.
Now, are you saying for the Capitol Steps or for all comedy in general, like the Laugh Factory, you know?
This struck me as inappropriate for the Capitol Steps simply because the Capitol Steps do funny political comedy. And there was nothing either funny, well, okay, the crowd laughed, but there was nothing political about it. It was just another joke had at the expense of an oppressed people.
I think part of the problem is that...
I mean, if it had been, it would have been appropriate if it had been, I'd had less work in a year than Don Blankenship's Tooth Fairy. You know, because I think the guy's got all his teeth, for starters.
Right.
But it was then the Tooth Fairy in West Virginia. I guess Kentucky and Southwest Virginia and Tennessee are just getting a break because they was in West Virginia. Of course, they could have in Appalachia.
Would you like?
And then everybody would have gotten a dose of it.
Would you like to have if the opportunity was to come up and say you were contacted by the writer of that joke in Capitol Steps to have a conversation? Because I take it as lines in one of these this type of writing where it's just, you know, filter
pack that there is some sort of politically stepped down dialogue that certain portions of this country are only able to comprehend in that fashion. You know, my father was a furnace operator,
mm-hmm.
formerly a coal miner, and he came home when the shift allowed. He came home, and the newspaper was waiting for him. You know, it wasn't, you know, Steve Douglas pipe and slippers and, you know, Uncle Charlie hollering, "Get that tramp out of here." It wasn't any of that.
Yeah.
But he had a newspaper, and he read it, and he watched the news, and he stayed, and maybe that's why I am the way I am, because my mother was the same way. And he'd take the sports section and pass mother the op-ed page, and she'd get done with the op-ed page and say, "Kenneth, read this," and hand it over to dad, and they were plugged in. But there's this, and of course, you know, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, would say that that's because the media elites, you know, bull, David, bull. It's because of the dumbing down of our political literacy and our social literacy in this country, deliberately done and done deliberately under, for the most part, Republican presidents. You know, it's in the Reagan administration that we see the decline of the teaching of civics in American high schools.
Mm-hmm.
In the George H.W. Bush administration. And only recently is there any kind of a return coming for that kind of instruction.
It's that culture of conditioning and corruption that has emerged in such a toxic stew. You know, when you were just talking earlier with Jim about David Paxton, I think that's his name, right?
Which?
The Reagan economist.
Oh no, Stockman.
Stockman, yeah, David Stockman. The interesting thing about Stockman is the fact that, well, number one, this has to be mentioned over and over again. He's a Reaganite who doesn't believe deregulation has anything to do with what we're living in. That's absolutely insane, Bob. That is what we are up against. That is what we were dealing with. If you can't understand when you put certain tenets into this environment that you live in, and we start to every day we go an increment up towards that maniacal craziness. If you can't understand that deregulation is part of that, then how can anyone have a discussion? How can anyone have a conversation? And that's what we deal with when you see those panels. And you know, Sam Cedar brings it up to him every time Stockman is on.
Oh, and by the way, he was on the Radio Row. Cedar was there. Didn't get a chance to speak to him, but he was there.
Oh, wow, that would have been great. Yeah, but I mean, the fact that we have to that we can't have this discussion, that we can't have this conversation about the destruction and the dangers of the toxic nature of deregulation.
But the one nice thing about Occupy is that we are beginning to have that conversation. I personally think that Occupy opened up the space in which Klaus Schwab, for instance, can say that this kind of capitalism is eating us alive.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't have happened without what Occupy did. So that space is opening up a little bit. You know, when Frank Luntz is telling Republicans, for God's sakes, quit defending capitalism. Talk about market economics and free markets, but quit saying capitalism.
It's interesting how we fall for certain things, and I do have an oh no moment for you, Bob, and it comes from Oliver Stone, and he says, in our history, you ask if there's a potential wild card to an internal economic collapse of the empire. Is an American an empire? And if so, do you foresee the fall of the empire? Yes, yes, both. I don't think it's a wild card. I think it's a given. There's no way that we can continue this ending spree. In fact, I think in many ways the most interesting candidate, are you ready for it, Bob? I'd even vote for him if he was running against Obama, is Ron Paul.
Ah, I knew you were going to say that.
Because he's the only one of anybody who's saying anything intelligent out the future of the world. And you know, that gives you pause, and it's like he's...
Yeah, but how can Burn Baby Burn, which is basically what Ron Paul says, be considered to be intelligent?
We need to go back
to a silver dime.
It is crazy hucksterism, because he's promoting against something of what he...
I mean, can you imagine Alex Jones as the White House communications director, David?
It would make me want to drink. It would be amusing.
Rot gut.
And he would definitely have the world's attention at how crazy he is, like Baghdad Bob or something. But it's interesting the fact that Ron Paul, who constantly is against the government, is dutifully employed by the government.
But see, even this trope that spending is out of control.
Yeah.
That's just more dog whistling racism. Hey, you know how it is with those people. They get a little bit of money and they go crazy buying fur coats and spinning rims, you know. There's no spending crisis. There is no spending crisis. I mean, if there's a spending crisis, it's a Pentagon crisis. But for Christ's sakes, we can't say that it's a Pentagon crisis now, can we? You know, you've got Mitt Romney, who speaks fluent French.
Right.
Who, when a French TV crew is trying to catch up with him during one of the primaries, Monsieur Romney, s'il vous plaît, dude ignores them. But there is tape of him out there, video of him out there, speaking, well, Americanized French. But intelligibly so. But he can't be seen doing that because the mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers of the GOP, who own the GOP. Well, God, he can talk that Frenchy talk. Yeah, obviously he doesn't believe in freedom fries.
Well, the business of republicanism is so, and conservatism is so toxic, because they keep playing to a lower and a lower and a lower and a lower base, like the thing with Santorum. That's all he has left. Well, what is he going to be, Bob, if he can't be that?
Oh, and by the way, Patty writing in, she says, not David Stockman. Stockman's actually been pretty honest regarding regulations. Patty says, I think it's Laffer that David is referencing, as in the Laffer curve.
Oh, no. It was Stockman, and it was on Dylan Ratigan, and this is the problem I have with a lot of conservatives. They don't believe, and you can sit them down, Bob, and you can say, do you think deregulation is a factor? And they'll wince and they'll be like, nah. But it creates the complete culture that we're living in. It sets the conditions and sets the levers and what direction they're going to go in. That's the problem. I would like to live in a world where everybody...
And see, I experienced that firsthand. Silly me, we were out of light bulbs. You know, that's because those liberals don't want you to have incandescent light bulbs anymore.
Yeah.
And I've got a lamp that lights those but doesn't like fluorescence. So I ran down the street a couple of nights ago to pick up a box of not cheap, cheap light bulbs at the local Rippy Mart. And lo and behold, here's another one of those old codgers that hangs around convenience stores in small southern towns, and he's got a piece of Xerox printer paper or whatever that he's folded away and tucked in his pocket, and he's passing it around to all his other old white codger buddies. And when he sees me coming, because everybody knows, you know, I'm a liberal. You know, they tuck it up and they talk. And he says, you know, what we need to do is get rid of some of these damn regulations so we can do some business around here. And I just looked at him and said, you idiot, what kind of regulations? The ones that let you breathe air and drink water? You against those regulations? You moron. And walked out the door. Sometimes it just...
No time for an answer, huh? He wasn't going to give you an answer.
I wasn't going to sit there and argue with him. He was a jackass.
And that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, there's a guy of color who works the counter there, and these old codgers stand around in front of him telling N-word jokes. And he has to take it because he's got to have that $5 an hour.
Right. I think the problem, it goes back to... you know, when I was watching that that show with Stockman, and they had Tim Carney on, and he's straight up conservatives they come, and he said something really poignant. He said the fact that what do you think Americans are going to pay attention to? Do you really think they're going to pay attention to the words Bain Capital or Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae? Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae has been in the public's year for over 2 years, and it kind of hit the panel.
And that's why I'm still concerned about this idea of inoculation.
Right. It's interesting what's happened. It's interesting that the dynamic that's happened, and the fact that we are continuing to have these discussions regarding what comes with Romney and Newt Gingrich.
Well, the Cayman Islands stuff deserves to get a real good airing before the American body politic. But odds are that'll dry up and blow away just as quick as the word comes down from some 1% for-profit media boss up above, you know, up in the thin air of CNN or NBC or CBS or ABC, you name it, Fox. Lay off the Amens K. I've got anime, ounde, airde. You want to keep your obj?
I do think that the interesting thing going to be is to see if Newt wins Florida, the Republicans, will they shift completely back to Newtville? And if that
am I mistaken? After Florida, isn't it Super Tuesday?
It may be.
And if Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old Haid, amateur paleontologist that he is, if he prevails in Florida, doesn't that give him momentum going into Super Tuesday, at which point isn't Willard Romney toast?
Again, this is the... This would be a... I would imagine a complete train wreck for the GOP in this sense, because I don't see them. I don't see anyone wanting to get behind Newt. Like Romney, they can sort of control, but Newt.
Well, the Adelsons just pumped another $5 million into Dr. Newt and Leroy Gingrich's super PAC.
But you know, there is something completely to the theory that. Inauthenticity in our country is always trumps over authenticity in politics. So if you keep being inauthentic over and over and over again, it's just that suddenly the public just says, you know, they're just so brainwashed and hammered, they don't know what authenticity is anymore, because you just see inauthenticity all the time.
Yeah. I know.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention before going was I found this interesting, and this definitely gives a sense for pause and a minute of reflection. But I was reading this report, and they said that the president of China, Hu Jintao, actually kicked off a lot of Westernized programming because he thought the country was experiencing excessive entertainment. Now, Bob, do you think we might need a...
If you're experiencing excessive entertainment, I mean, you got to have time for watching American Idol, and that cuts into Apple's ability to work your ass for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and leaving you one day to just lay flat in the dorm.
That's true, but it does bring light to the fact that we are completely overdosing on every aspect of entertainment in a way that we've never been immersed in 24/7, whether it's on the internet or the TV or films. It's just everywhere constantly.
No escape.
You have to wonder if eventually something is going to have to be done that sets in, I hate to say this word, but a regulation on TV, because I just don't see, again, it creates more of that culture of corruption that we're talking about. Here we are, full circle again. It's that culture of corruption constantly without any...
Well, there's a phrase out there that we are entertaining ourselves to death.
Yeah, or like what Roger Waters says, amusing ourselves to death.
Yeah, amusing. I'm sorry. That's it. Hey, David, I got a roll, but thank you so much. Great conversation, and thanks for helping out, my friend.
All right, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Later.
Bye now. Remember, we do have a $50 challenge on the table. David has responded, and hopefully a few others will as well. 25 minutes past the hour, and we go onward. Not that one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Welcome back. It's Lib in South Carolina.
Oh, hey, how you doing? Good to hear from you. Thanks.
We are so glad to have you back.
Well, I'm tickled pink to be back.
I bet you are. And I will respond to Jim. He didn't bring a little bit. He brought a boatload.
Always does.
And on that... Bill Moyer thing, we've been talking about it in the chat room. Thank you very much. You can find it, the entire interview. Google Moyer's the symbol and company, colon, crony capitalism.
And Moyers ampersand company, colon,
crony capitalism.
Okay.
And it is well worth, the first 35 minutes is with David Stockman, and the rest of the show is also very good, but it's some lady who you will recognize, but Cosmic Michael says it's also at www.billmoyers.com.
Okay, okay, yeah, I see that.
It's well worth watching, very well worth watching. And by the way, PBS cost every taxpayer about 65 cents a year.
Jeeves, I didn't realize it was that tiny.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that same note, I do believe that the Ken Burns specials should be required viewing for every elementary school and high school.
I've seen where some historians take issue with his Civil War work, but nobody's ever going to agree entirely on anything touching upon that great conflagration. But his piece on Prohibition was absolutely made my eyes open up and bug out.
The one on the national parks.
Oh, that was beautiful too. Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, that blew me away. I saw him, I believe it was on C-SPAN. He did an address for a anniversary of the Gettysburg Address at Gettysburg. It was ungodly cold. Everybody was bundled up, and he gave a 40-minute speech that will just knock you out.
Which is fascinating, because I think Lincoln's speech was maybe 3.5.
Right. Yeah.
And the other guy who got up and spoke before Lincoln went on forever.
Right. Yeah, for 2.5 hours or so. Yeah. But on a lighter note, opening your show tonight, you had me falling out my chair talking about the gaffe tape. I have to share with you my former boss at U.S. Army Entertainment. His favorite saying was, "My career and my reputation are held together with gaff tape."
Yeah.
And we used to start our six-month tour with 40 cases of the brand name gaff tape, not the cheap stuff.
Right.
The brand.
Because, you know, the cheap stuff don't stick so good.
Oh, no. For those of you who don't realize what gaff tape is, gaffers are the lighting technicians in movies, and they stick reflectors or lighting instruments to the sides of buildings, to trees, to lampposts, to anything in order to get the lighting right. The tape, you can separate it with or without thumbnails. You can tear a piece off, and it does not reflect light, and it will stick to absolutely everything. And that's what they were using. The NASCAR guys finally got the idea, and they were using that on the cars after they crashed. Now they've developed their own brand of it, but they were buying, you know, cases of gaff tape. So,
well, some of it's going with me. Ain't no getting around it. No, because this is not a criticism. It's just how it is. You got a bunch of broadcasters in a teeny tiny room.
Oh yeah.
And they're sitting. You know, you're sitting across the typical, you know, fold out convention hall rectangular table.
Yeah.
And wires are going everywhere because, you know, they've got the place wired for starts. The folks that are hosting it. And then right. We come in with our equipment, and we've got more wires, and he just happened to hook the mother wire that took everything with it. And my Ethernet cable that was attached to the laptop, it was long since devoid of that Apparently, the single most fragile substance on planet Earth is that little clip on an RJ45 plug. And it had been long gone. And so I kind of had it taped into the laptop, which was not good because that's on the same side as the heat vent anyway. We're into some deep, deep night baseball now. But, and so that went, the power supply to the video monitor, or to the video mixer went, the power supply to the laptop went, and everything went to hell.
I got one better for you. War story, no shit, there we were. At Fort Rucker, Alabama, we were doing a U.S. Army soldier show, and they marched in the troops. It was literally standing room only. They had troops lined on both outside aisles of this 750-seat movie theater, but we had turned it into a theatrical theater. And the power cable going from backstage, which came from a generator outside, it had one twist lock connector that was running up house left, taped against the wall, except when they marched all these troops in, there was somebody standing over my connector. I was the audio director that year. And so right in the middle of the show, I'm standing there behind, you know, $100,000 worth of audio equipment. I got, you know, tape music soundtrack going, and I got performers running around with wireless microphones on stage. Everything's going good. The lights are going good. You know, we got a show going here. And the person standing over my power connector took a wrong step, and I went down. No mixing console, that means no
full power. On sweat condition alpha.
No signal going to the speakers, or, you know, the amp racks and the speakers. So luckily we still had lights. And me running around in uniform with a flashlight, found the connector, I knew exactly where it was, yelled, "Don't stand there!" Remade, you know, twist locked the connector back in, ran back to the mixing console, grabbed my headphones, and going, "Okay, we're back up. It's like, let's do something."
Houston, we have audio.
Thank you very much. Talk about.
So yeah, you understand the need for that roll of tape. It's going. Yeah. The first day we had some real gremlins. John, I got into DC on Wednesday night. Got into the room and got out our equipment and started, you know, pre-show testing with John.
Right.
And we had everything squared away, and I got down there the next morning, and lo and behold, the mixer and the software wanted a firmware update that we didn't find out that it needed until 2 minutes before showtime. Because it didn't tell us till 2 minutes before showtime. So, and so that was just a mess. But then the second day comes along, and it was running quite nicely until the foot cable done. So yeah, I'm ordering the good stuff and the good stuff, the wide stuff, and everything's getting taped down.
Yeah,
the 2-inch.
Because
if you use duct tape, you just get a mess.
No, don't do it, man. No.
It's not worth it. Don't do it.
The other aspect of real gaff tape is you pull it up, it doesn't pull up the linoleum or whatever it's attached
to. Yeah, it sticks great, but it unsticks.
It doesn't leave that gummy goo on your cables, on the floor, on anything. That's the beauty of real gaff tape, you know. But anyways.
So I've just got to find me a supplier, because I'm going to have to order it, because I'm pretty sure that
I will find in the past.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. I've been through that problem before. Also, stage managers have a have a credo. You only need two tools, WD-40 to make things move and gaff tape
to make them not move.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a flashlight to see what you need.
Oh, yeah. You got to have a real mag light. Don't go with that other. Don't go with the cheap one. Get yourself a three-cell mag light. And somebody gets up on stage who ain't supposed to be on stage, you can use that mag light too. A lot of bar audio technicians have used that one before.
Oh, without a doubt. And mag lights are at least American made, so.
I did not know that.
Yes, made somewhere in California and remain so to this day.
Absolutely fabulous.
And their LED lights are brighter than the center of the sun now.
I haven't tried those yet. I'm not working these days.
You can wave in aircraft with them.
Oh God. Aircraft landing lights.
Yeah, I've got a what goes in my gig bag is a 3 AA cell sort of long skinny mag, and it's indispensable, and you can see anything with it.
I've got to go look for
I've that. Got that and a little LED head worn one that is great for crawling around under desks and such.
Yeah, I used to work with a piano player who normally works on Broadway. He had the very first LED glasses with the lights in the temples.
Mm-hmm.
So he could sit in the orchestra pit and read his score.
Right.
And that was 15 years ago. Way cool. But anyways, what I really called about,
yes.
I wanted to tell you about voting in South Carolina.
Oh, that yes, because you were there for the great primary.
I was there. Walked into my local polling place. And instead of the four normal poll workers, there were only two. I'm assuming that's because it was only a Republican primary. But they recognized me.
So what? I mean, was there no South Carolina primary for Barack Obama?
Nope. He's unopposed.
Oh, so it's okay. So he just does okay. So if he's unopposed, they just don't have to have one,
right? Although there
well, I'm surprised Randall Terry didn't sign up for that one.
there was about a 30-second protest locally that the GOP didn't want to pay for it. They wanted to charge the state.
Oh yeah, I know that, and that's where that whole Stephen Colbert thing came from.
Yeah, and like I said, that lasted for about 30 seconds, and most of us around here said, hell, I don't care, we can spend $750,000 if I'm able to vote, and so I did, and like I said, I walked in, and there were only two poll workers instead of the normal four.
Were they octogenarians?
Yeah. And they recognized me and was, oh, how are you doing? And I pull out my wallet and my voter registration card, which is a piece of paper without a photo on it, and look pretty rumpled and everything. Probably the only thing worse looking in my wallet is the condom that I've been carrying around since I was in high school. And
yeah, at this point, it's just a talisman.
Right. They say, oh, you need to get you a new one of these. And it's like, oh, well, you know who I am and everything. And they found my name on the list, matched my address and everything, beside the fact that they recognized me, knew my name, and had me sign the ledger. I was number 99 for that day. This was at 5 p.m. And there was a gentleman in his U.S. Postal Service uniform, was just finishing voting. So there was only four of us in this room. And so they...
Was he going to take his country back?
it gets better. So they took me over to, they had two of the machines set up, and the gentleman showed me, okay.
Both of them were video game voting, right?
Exactly. And shows me how to do it. You make your choice. You review it. If it comes up right, then you'll press the top right-hand corner, and it says cast your vote. And it took me about 20 seconds. I did vote for Ron Paul because I want him to go third party.
Yeah, but you realize that's never going to happen, right?
Right.
Because of Rand. You see,
yeah.
This is all about name recognition.
There was no way in hell that I was going to vote for Gingrich.
No, but what I'm saying there, that there will be no Ron Paul third-party candidacy this year. This is about establishing the brand for Rand.
I totally agree with
and
you.
And so, therefore, Ron Paul will not poop in Rand's nest, because Rand is the one who really plans on being the Aqua Buddha president.
Right.
And he's
I
got,
know, but
you know, he's it, got, you know, he can wait it out till, he can wait it out till 2020, or 24 even. He's a young man.
Right.
You know, he's got, it would be nothing for him to wait 12 years
well,
to run.
Besides the fact that he's stealing all the damn headlines today. With
yeah.
That little stunt.
Yeah, because he was detained by the TSA, jackbooted.
Right. By the union workers.
Right.
No, that's such a thing. I cannot disagree with you, but given the choices, I damn sure wasn't.
Well, I don't know. Herman Cain was still on the ballot, wasn't he?
Yes, but that yeah. was such a blatant because it was tied with Colbert.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to make it look like you know, if he had come up with big numbers, then everybody would have pointed at Colbert and said, "Oh, see, it's the Democrats spoiling it." I didn't want to do that.
Well, there's some logic in your process there. Yes.
Yeah, there was no cut and dried thing. Yeah,
And Michelle wasn't on the ballot, was she?
I don't believe she was. There were eight, and I cannot remember. I know Santorum was. There was one of the guys who...
Yeah, and you just would have gone into spontaneous projectile vomiting at the mere thought of trying to vote for, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich.
Right. No way in hell that would have happened. You know, I would have burst into flames in the room. So... And Mitt, I don't want to give him the satisfaction of anything. So anyways, we did the little process and a little chit chat and walking away. They said, "Oh, well, that was quick." It's like, "Well, it was only one thing." And, by the way, I hate those damn machines, and you won't see me in November because I'm going to vote absentee because I found out that the absentee votes in South Carolina are counted first before the machine votes.
But don't they make you vote on a machine for early voting?
No. There's an office outside the courthouse that I can go to. I can pick up a paper ballot a week or 2 weeks before the election in November and vote, fill it out, and turn it right back in and say, "I'm going to be out of town on November 7th. Show my ID, and my ballot will be counted as I voted." So I was explaining that to these poll workers who recognized me. And the guy who took me through the machine, he said, "Oh yeah, I remember you from last year." And I said, "Yeah, when I told you that," and back then there was a room full of voters waiting in line I said, yeah, you remember that primary for demented when I voted for Vic Rawl, and three times the machine flipped the vote to Alvin Green, who I had never heard of.
And, of course, it goes without saying that within these video game voting systems, there is no way, none at all, ever, within any, impossible, there is no way to verify the actual intent of the voter.
Exactly. I had everybody's ear. I mean, the postal worker was standing behind me with his ears open, going, "What the hell?" And the two poll workers were going, "Huh?" But we remember you telling that story. And I said, "Yeah, get on the internet, Google black box voting, and Google bradblog.com." And you'll find out about this stuff. And I told them the story about the American scientist who put together a $6 package from Radio Shack and totally flipped the votes in one of those machines.
Mm-hmm. I remember. I was going to do. I think I was going to be gone for some election. And I was going to do early voting, and I happened to walk in with my Bluetooth on my ear.
Oh, no.
And those folks had a conniption. Well, what's
they
the matter?
Should.
You got to turn that off. You got to turn it off. It can ruin all the voting. Really? And yet you're using those machines?
Right. And I told them that California and three or four other states had outlawed those blasted machines. And then here was the real jaw dropper. I was halfway to the door and I said, you know, those machines are owned by a former United States senator who's a Republican. And there was an audible gasp in the room. And the lady who checked me in, she said, "Is that legal?" And the postal worker chimed in, "Is it ethical?"
Well, look at you putting on a little civics class there at your polling place.
I walked outside, and the postal worker's standing there. He held out his hand, introduced himself, and said, "Thank you very much. That was kind of informative." And he and I stood there and talked for about 15 minutes. And I said, "Well, you're a union worker. You know about what's going on. They're trying to bust the unions and bust the U.S. Postal Service." And he said, "Yeah, I hear a lot of things." And I explained all of that poison pill legislation about, he didn't realize that the U.S. Postal Service made money last year.
Wow.
They made money last year, but because of this poison pill, they're having to pay all of this money into a retirement fund. I pointed at his chest and said, "They're paying for your grandchildren's retirements if they become postal workers. And they got to do it in 5 years. Who in their right mind would want to do that?" And he just shook his head like, "What the hell is going on here?"
Well, what other corporate entity is compelled to behave in such fashion? I mean, there's that.
He didn't realize that U.S. postal workers are the largest union in America.
Well,
that's why they have.
And see, that is why I say that it's the conversations that take place out at the gas pump, in the line at the post office, standing there with a loaf of bread at the grocery store. If you're not afraid to speak up, and, you know, I'm not talking about yelling and hollering and screaming and carrying on. If you're just not afraid to carry on a conversation with your neighbors in a sane and semi-sober fashion, you can make a difference. I mean, like this goober down at the gas station. If nothing else, he'll look over his shoulder before he hauls out his next Obama N-word joke that he got on the email.
Been there, done that.
Just slow it down a little bit.
Well,
and by the way, Jim sending a note saying, thanks for the kind remarks. He says, I've been there. Jim, of course, is a native South Carolinian, by the way.
Oh, he's a good man. But, yeah, that made my weekend. That 30 minutes that I spent at my polling place doing...
Now you feel like you've done something, don't you?
Hell yeah! The best thing I've done in months, I tell you. But I will let you go. Welcome back. We miss you when you're gone. We know you're doing God's work and everybody else's. Not that I'm religious. But
nor I, but I understand the spirit in which it was offered and accepted and accepted accordingly.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing.
Sure.
Gingrich is so busted. I got three websites up on my browsers here. The food stamp president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, write this one down.
Okay.
The food stamp speaker. Google that. It's at
because he participated in the expansion of food stamps as well.
Right.
And the largest expansion
view.
The largest expansion in food in the history of food stamps came under George H.W. Bush.
Mhm.
I do believe.
Absolutely. The article, the food stamp speaker, what's the other one? Come on. Under Beach Peanuts, who is really good on Twitter. It's a liberal out of Georgia. Gingrich, food stamps president, Florida TV ad debunked. And then there's another one from Color Lines. For the record, George W. Bush is the real.
Oh, is it George W., not George H.W.? Okay.
George W.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, based on your response on Twitter, I went and looked up Cletus and followed Cletus. It looks like that'll be a profitable good follow. And David in Tennessee, who has been... in no small number of bar band venues, referencing Maglites, going back to that conversation, says, tell him you need two. One large enough to swat offenders, and one small enough to hold in one's mouth by its end for at least 3 minutes. You need to see shit in small places where one's hands are required for fixing it.
There's a fix for that. At REI.
Yeah.
Recreational equipment, whatever.
Yeah.
I used to have one. There's a plastic cap that goes over that small mag light.
Yeah.
So that you can hold it in your teeth.
Yeah, because that bare metal's kind of a pain.
Oh, man, I've done it for hours.
But that's why I've got the little 3AA cell model, because it's perfect for that. Yeah, you just get in your teeth and you hold it like... And bless their hearts, my sister and brother-in-law were kind enough to send along that head worn earlier this year, and it sure does chasing wires around under the desk here a lot less frustrated.
Trust me, I've had my head buried inside the back of an amplifier rack or an accessory rack and stuff for hours, but I think they call it a Bitalite. It's a little plastic cap, and it's got two big grooves in it, so you just... You pop that thing to the end of your mini mag light, and you can hold it there for a long time while you're chasing around things. So that's a good trick.
Well, and that means there's a lot of folks that have been down that road. Well, you have yourself a good evening. It's awful good hearing from you, and don't be a stranger, okay?
Ab- Absolutely. Thank you for the time, and thank you for the laughs, man.
Oh, thank you. Take care. Bye now.
Well, bye-bye.
It's our buddy Liberal in South Carolina from the chat room. That's how you know him there. And here we are about 3.5 minutes before show's end. One last little note out of the D.C. trip. Along the way, upon the recommendation of a listener, Guy James and I went and had dinner over at the Weston City Center off of Thomas Circle in D.C. And I got to tell you, those folks were wonderful. And especially, we sat down and ate at the bar. So much simpler and more relaxed that way. Our dinner was kindly funded by a listener, this same one. And we sat down and had dinner there, and I have to tell you, it was magnificent. And if you've heard past accounts of trips to D.C., a lot of the joy is in sitting down to a nice repast with Guy James, because nobody appreciates a good dinner more than he does. And I saw that man go into flights of rapture. He had medallions of tenderloin with some sort of, it was like a cognac. He said it was like a cognac cream sauce with black peppercorns softened in it. And he was transported. And I, too, was transported by what was probably the tenderest New York strip I have ever tasted in my life. And just by way of thanking folks for a job well done, Kathy at the bar at the Weston City Center is, well, she has no peers. She is simply wonderful, as is all the staff there. So that brings us to the end of this Monday edition of The Horn. Hope you'll be here tomorrow evening as well. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to the three of you who responded to Robert's challenge and got us over the hump and matched his funds. So that takes care of fundraising for tonight. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to all of you who at various times throughout the months make sure that all of this stays going. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. I also got to get together with our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, during the trip, and that's always a joy. Thanks to him for what he does. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And thanks to John Fox, who put in so many hours trying to get all of this right during this last trip, and puts in so many hours that you don't even know about. The same goes for Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He never sends a bill, and he has kept liberal progressive radio alive on the internet for going on 10 years now. It's quite amazing. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there and learn about their work. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.